All right, let's dive in. Today, we're tackling a topic you, the listeners, specifically requested.
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah, humane endpoints in animal research.
Really important stuff.
It is. And you even sent us this 2024 update on the topic.
Lots to unpack there.
I know. I was already surprised just going through it, like all the different considerations.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
For figuring out these humane endpoints.
It's more than just you know.
Yeah, it's not just a
way to euthanize, right? It's way more nuanced.
Exactly. And to help us break it all down, we've got an expert here.
Happy to be here. I think this is something that people maybe haven't thought too much about.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But it's so crucial for both the ethics, obviously.
Of course.
But also for the science.
Yeah, getting good data.
Right. Because if the animals are suffering, that can actually really mess with your results.
Makes sense.
So humane endpoints, they're really a win-win.
I'm learning that already just from this 2024 update.
It's a good one.
It is. And I was fascinated to learn, like, even simple observations.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Like a mouse, if its fur is all ruffled.
Uh-huh.
Or a fish just hanging out at the bottom of the tank.
Instead of swimming around.
Yeah. Those can actually be
red flags.
Yeah. They can be signs that something's not right.
Exactly.
And that's not even getting into, you know, more obvious things.
All right. Like weight loss or...
Yeah. Or if they're, you know, having trouble moving around.
Exactly.
So it really is about, like you said, it's more than just when to euthanize.
Mm-hmm.
It's about recognizing those signs. Maybe even early signs.
Earliest signs possible.
Of distress.
Yeah.
And intervening. Like figuring out what to do.
Right, to minimize suffering.
And I like that this update uses the term humane intervention points.
Oh, HIPs.
HIPs, yeah. It sounds so much better.
Catchy.
And just saying like intervention or, you know.
It's more specific.
Yeah.
It really highlights what we're trying to do here.
So instead of automatically going to euthanasia.
That's not always the first option.
Right.
There might be other things you can try.
Like what? Give me an example.
So... you could adjust the animal's diet, maybe.
Okay.
Or provide some pain relief.
Oh, makes sense.
Maybe enrich their environment a bit, you know, to reduce stress.
So it's kind of like...
what were you thinking?
I was thinking, like, if you go to the doctor...
Okay.
And you're having a problem...
But don't just immediately say, surgery.
Right. They're like, well, let's try some medication first, or let's, you know...
change your lifestyle.
Yeah, do some physical therapy. Like, there's options.
Exactly. And it's the same in research. We want to explore all those options.
Before sort of resorting to that last step.
Right. And sometimes those interventions...
can even make the research better.
Exactly. Because if you have an animal that's less stressed...
right. They're going to be, like, behaving more naturally.
Yeah, more likely to, you know, give you reliable data.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's really a win-win.
Now, this update... also gets into some tricky territory.
Oh, like what?
The moribund state. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It is. It's basically when an animal is...
nearing death.
Right. Like really close.
Really close.
And the EU directive on animal research...
they're pretty strict.
Yeah. They say death should be avoided as an endpoint whenever possible.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
But the moribund state is a bit of a...
gray area.
Yeah. It's like, how close is too close?
Right, because the animal's still alive, technically.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, suffering.
And the Canadian guidelines actually...
they're interesting.
They actually list the moribund state as an endpoint to be avoided.
So you can't even let them get to that point.
Which makes you wonder, can an animal that's that close to death...
it's a hard question.
...ever really be in a humane state?
Right, like, are we just prolonging their suffering?
Yeah. That's a tough one.
It's a question everyone involved in research has to grapple with.
Researchers, vets, everyone.
Exactly.
Because there's no easy answer.
No, and I think the science actually plays a role here, too.
Oh, how so?
Well, when an animal is that close to death, their physiology is all messed up.
Like their organs are shutting down and stuff?
Exactly. So the data you get from them...
it's not going to be accurate.
Might not be reliable at all.
So it's not even good science at that point.
Right. And that's why it's so important to have these discussions.
Yeah. Like where do we draw the line?
Exactly. What is the point of no return?
Tough questions, but important ones.
Absolutely.
Now moving on, this update then gets into something I found really interesting.
Oh, what's that?
It's like becoming a detective.
A detective.
Yeah, a detective of distress.
I like that.
You do?
Yeah, it's a good way to think about it.
Because it's all about, like, noticing those subtle clues that an animal might be suffering.
Right, those early warning signs.
Exactly.
Because sometimes they can be really subtle.
They can be, and the update gives all these examples.
Oh, like what?
Like, it could be something you can see, a change in their appearance.
Morphological changes, we call those.
Okay, so, like... They give an example of mice with malocclusion.
Malocclusion, that's where...
their teeth aren't aligned properly.
Yeah, and it can cause all sorts of problems.
Like ulcers.
Painful ulcers.
Yeah, and then they also talk about fish with spinal deformities.
Oh, so they can't swim properly.
Yeah, it's really sad.
And it can be really painful for them.
So those are things you can actually see.
Mm-hmm. But then there are also behavioral changes.
Oh, right. Like how they're acting.
Exactly. So like a mouse that's not building a nest.
Even though it has all the materials.
Yeah, that's a sign something might be wrong.
Or a rodent that's just lying there, all stretched out by itself.
Instead of huddling with its cage mates.
Yeah, like it doesn't want to be around the others.
It could be a sign of pain or distress.
Like they're trying to tell us something's wrong.
Exactly. And then there's the stuff we can't see.
Oh, like what?
Physiological changes. So things happening inside the body.
So we need special tools for that.
Sometimes, yeah. Like the update mentions using an infrared thermometer.
Oh, to measure their temperature.
Yeah, and they say that hypothermia in a mouse.
So, like, if their body temperature's too low?
Could be an early sign of infection.
Wow. So we're talking about being real detectives here.
We are. We have to be observant and really pay attention to the animals.
And know what's normal for them.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to have well-trained staff.
People who work with the animals.
Yeah, people who understand their behavior.
And can recognize those subtle cues.
Because those cues, they can mean the difference between...
life or death for the animal.
Absolutely.
Now, the update also makes it clear that humane endpoints...
they're not one size fits all.
Right. They're not just like a checklist.
Every experiment is different.
Yeah. And every animal is different.
Exactly. So we need to tailor those endpoints.
To the specific study.
Right. And the animals involved.
And they even talk about like different types of endpoints.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
There's generic endpoints.
Those are the ones that apply to...
oh, those studies.
Yeah, like weight loss or decreased activity.
Or changes in their appearance.
Right. Those are kind of general indicators that something's wrong.
But then you also have project-specific endpoints.
Those are the ones that are...
tailored to the experiment.
Exactly. So like...
okay, so give me an example.
Okay, so if you're studying cancer...
tumor size would be important.
Right. How big the tumor is, how fast it's growing.
And where it is too, right?
Yeah, because a tumor in one location might be more problematic...
than a tumor in a different spot.
Exactly. So those are all things you'd have to consider.
And then for diabetes research?
Blood glucose levels would be a key endpoint.
Okay, so like how well their body is regulating sugar.
Right, and whether the treatment is having an effect.
That makes sense. And you know, one thing that surprised me.
What's that?
Was that even weight loss?
Which seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, like if an animal's losing weight.
That's a bad sign.
You'd think so.
But it's not always that simple.
It's not.
No, because sometimes weight loss can actually mask other problems.
What do you mean?
Well, like the update says, it could be a sign of...
like a tumor growing inside.
Exactly, or fluid buildup.
So they might look like they're losing weight.
But it's actually something else going on.
Wow, so you really have to look at the whole picture.
You do. You can't just rely on one indicator.
Like weight or even how they're acting?
You need a holistic view of the animal's condition.
Okay, that makes sense.
And that brings us to score sheets.
Ah, yes, the score sheets.
They're a way to kind of systematize.
Yeah, make sure everyone's on the same page.
Exactly. So you're not just relying on...
one person's opinion.
Right, because everyone might have a slightly different interpretation.
Of what's normal or what's not.
Exactly. So having a score sheet...
helps to standardize things.
Exactly. But the update also makes it clear...
what's that?
That these score sheets shouldn't just be checklists.
So it's not just about ticking boxes.
No, it's about really understanding what those scores mean.
And using them to make decisions.
Exactly. So like the update says...
what does it say?
Avoid vague terms.
Oh, like moderate.
Yeah, or consider...
because those are subjective.
Right. What does moderate even mean?
It means different things to different people.
Exactly. So instead of that...
we need clear language.
Right. So each score should be clearly defined.
And linked to a specific action.
Exactly. So if the score is this, then you do that.
It takes the guesswork out of it.
It does. It makes it much more objective.
Okay, so it's not just about filling in the blanks.
No, it's about using those scores to guide your actions.
To actually make a difference for the animals.
Exactly. And the update gives a good example.
Oh, what's that?
A scoring system for surgical wound healing.
Okay, so like...
how well the wound is closing, whether there's any infection.
And each score... has a specific action associated with it.
Right. So if the wound looks a certain way...
you know exactly what to do.
Exactly. Whether it's just observing the animal...
or giving them pain relief.
Or even considering further surgery.
So it really helps to, like, guide the decision making.
It does. It makes it much more systematic.
And less prone to bias.
Exactly.
Now, here's a question the update raises that I thought was really interesting.
Oh, what's that?
Is the term humane endpoint an oxymoron?
That's a good question.
Because, after all, some level of suffering
is often unavoidable in research.
Right. So how can we call it humane if the animal is still suffering?
It's a valid point. I think the update is trying to acknowledge that tension.
Like, it's not a perfect system.
Exactly. But it's about striving to do the best we can.
To minimize harm.
Right. And humane endpoints, they represent that commitment.
To continually improving.
To always be looking for ways to reduce suffering.
It's a journey.
It is. It's not a destination.
Wow. That's really powerful. And honestly, we've only just scratched the surface of this update.
There's so much more to discuss.
I know. And we'll be digging deeper into it.
In our next episode.
So stay tuned.
A journey with a really detailed map, this update.
It is. It's like they break down all these different...
of endpoints.
Yeah, like categories.
Oh, like that. Like a field guide.
For ethical research.
Yeah, that's good.
And that really helps, I think, for researchers to wrap their heads around.
It can be overwhelming, all the different factors.
It can be. And to know, like, okay, this type of endpoint...
applies to this type of study.
Yeah, it gives them a framework.
A starting point.
And we've talked about the generic endpoints, but the update really digs into...
project-specific.
Yeah, those are the ones that are like...
tailored to the individual experiment.
Exactly. And it's amazing how much thought goes into that.
Yeah, it's crucial.
It is. And like they give the example of cancer research.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
It is. And they talk about how...
tumor size, obviously.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But also the location of the tumor.
Oh, that makes sense.
And even the appearance of it.
So like what it looks like.
Yeah, like is it necrotic? Is it ulcerated?
Okay, so like is it... breaking down or...
Exactly. All those things can factor in...
whether it's reached a humane endpoint.
Exactly.
And it's not just about the tumor itself.
Right, right. What else were you thinking of?
Like, what if the cancer...
spreads.
Yeah, metastasizes.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other...
complication.
Right, because if it spreads to the lungs...
the animal might have trouble...
breathing.
Yeah, or if it spreads to the bones...
pain management becomes a huge issue.
So it's like each experiment has its own...
unique set of challenges.
Yeah, and you can't just... like
copy and paste endpoints from another study.
Exactly. Even if they're looking at the same disease.
It might not be appropriate.
Right. And the update really stresses that.
Researchers need to think carefully about this.
Yeah. To really tailor those endpoints.
To the specific animals and the specific study.
One thing I hadn't really thought about before.
What's that?
Was the control animals.
Oh, yeah. Those are the ones that...
don't get the treatment.
Right. They're just the baseline.
But the update talks about how we need to consider humane endpoints for them, too.
Absolutely, because they're still part of the study.
And in some ways, they might be more vulnerable.
How so?
Well, like, if the treatment is effective.
The control group might be the first to reach a humane endpoint.
Right, because they're not getting any help.
Exactly. So that's something to really think about.
When you're designing the experiment.
From the very beginning.
Yeah. And it really highlights how humane endpoints.
It's about protecting all the animals.
Not just the ones getting the treatment.
Exactly. We have a responsibility to all of them.
And it's not just about different types of experiments, right?
Right. What else?
Like... our understanding of humane endpoints.
It's constantly evolving.
Yeah, it's not like a static thing.
No. As we learn more about animals.
Our approaches to their care should change, too.
Exactly. And the update specifically mentions...
what?
How new information about sentience.
Oh, so like how aware animals are of their surroundings.
Exactly. How much they can feel and experience.
Could lead to changes in how we...
define and implement humane endpoints.
So like... as we learn more about what animals are capable of experiencing...
we might need to adjust our standards.
To provide even better care.
Exactly, because what might have been considered humane in the past...
might not be considered humane now.
Right, and that's a good thing.
It shows that we're progressing.
We're learning and evolving.
And to give an example, the update of...
cephalopods.
Those are like octopuses and squids.
Right, and they were included in the EU directive back in 2010.
Okay, so that was a big change.
It was, because it recognized that these animals...
they're capable of experiencing...
pain and distress.
Just like mammals.
Exactly. So they deserve the same level of protection.
That's amazing. And it makes you wonder, like...
what other species might be included in the future?
Yeah, as we learn more about...
animal cognition and sentience.
It's exciting, and also, like, kind of a responsibility.
It is. It's a challenge.
To keep learning and keep improving.
Exactly. And speaking of challenges.
Oh, here we go.
The update also delves into this question of...
Yeah, how humane are humane endpoints, really?
Right, because even with the best intentions...
Some level of suffering.
...is often unavoidable in research.
So it's like, is it even possible to have a truly humane endpoint?
It's a paradox, for sure.
It is. It's like a contradiction in terms, almost.
But I think the update is trying to say...
Right.
...that humane endpoints are about striving for continuous improvement.
Okay, so it's not about... achieving some absolute standard of humaneness.
Yeah, it might not even be possible.
Right, but it's about constantly trying to do better.
To minimize harm as much as we can.
Exactly, and to be honest and open about the challenges.
Because it's not easy.
It's not, but it's important work.
It is, and this update, it really provides a roadmap.
For navigating that complexity.
Yeah, it gives us practical guidance, things we can actually do.
And it asks some really thought-provoking questions.
Make us think critically about what we're doing.
Exactly, and why we're doing it.
And it reminds us that...
We all have a role to play in ensuring the ethical treatment of animals in research.
Absolutely. Researchers, vets, animal care staff, everyone.
It's a team effort.
It really is.
Now, one of the things the update really emphasizes is...
clear communication.
Yeah, making sure everyone's on the same page.
And that starts with the score sheets.
Ah, yes, those score sheets.
Remember we talked about how...
they need to be clear and specific.
Exactly. No vague terms.
Like moderate or consider.
Right, because those are too subjective.
They mean different things to different people.
Exactly. So instead, we need...
clear definitions for each score.
And each score should be linked to...
a specific action.
Right. So if the score is this...
you do that.
It takes the best work out of it.
Makes it much more objective.
Exactly. And less prone to bias.
Because we all have biases.
We do, even if we don't realize it.
So having a system like this...
helps to minimize that.
And they give a great example.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
Of a scoring system for...
surgical wound healing.
Yeah. So, like, how well the wound is closing.
Is there any redness, any swelling... any discharge.
And they have a scale.
Ranging from a completely closed wound.
With no signs of infection.
To a severe infection that needs immediate attention.
And each score.
Corresponds to a specific action.
So you know exactly what to do.
Whether it's just observing the animal.
Or giving them pain relief.
Or even considering further surgery.
So it's like a roadmap for...
managing those wounds.
Exactly. And it takes the guesswork out of it.
It does. And the update goes even further, actually.
Oh, how so?
They suggest... using visual aids.
Visual aids?
Yeah, like illustrations or photos.
To make the assessments even clearer.
Exactly, because sometimes words aren't enough.
So instead of just describing redness...
you might have a series of pictures showing different degrees of redness.
Oh, I like that.
It makes it much easier to...
there's the difference.
Exactly. And to be consistent in your assessments.
Especially for people who are newer to the field.
Or who haven't worked with that particular species before.
Yeah, it can be really helpful.
It's all about providing as much clarity as possible.
You make sure everyone's on the same page.
Exactly. And for situations where you need to act quickly.
Oh, like an emergency?
Yeah, the update discusses using...
Hunginary scoring.
Have you heard of that?
I don't think so.
It's basically a yes or no system.
Okay, so you're just noting whether a sign is present or absent.
Exactly, so it's really quick.
And you don't have to spend time...
trying to determine the severity.
So it's good for, like...
observations where you need to act immediately.
Like if an animal is bleeding or has an open wound?
Exactly. In those situations, speed is key.
And binary scoring can be really effective.
It can be, but even with these more objective systems...
it's still important to remember...
that not all clinical signs are created equal.
Right. Some might be more urgent than others.
Exactly. A small scratch might not be as concerning as...
a change in their breathing pattern.
Exactly. And that's where experience comes in.
Knowing what to look for.
And knowing when to act.
And the update encourages researchers...
to work closely with veterinarians.
Oh, of course. They're the experts.
They are. And also with animal care staff.
The people who work with the animals every day.
Exactly. Because they know those animals best.
So it's really a team effort.
It is. It takes everyone working together.
To ensure that the animals
are receiving the best possible care.
And the update reminds us that humane endpoints.
They're not just about animal welfare.
There's more to it.
Yeah. They can also impact...
the research itself.
Exactly. Because if the endpoints are set too early...
might not get enough data.
Right. The animals might be removed from the study.
Before you can really see the effects of the treatment.
And that could undermine the whole experiment.
And waste valuable resources.
Exactly. And it could even delay...
the development of new treatments.
Right. So there's a balance to strike.
Between protecting the animals...
and getting good scientific data.
It's like walking a tightrope.
It is. But it's a tightrope we have to walk.
For the sake of both animals and humans. Now, one thing I found really interesting
Right there.
was the updates discussion of
technology.
Yeah, how technology is being used
to refine humane endpoints.
Exactly. And they talk about these
automated monitoring systems.
Oh, wow. So
they can track all sorts of things.
Like the animal's heart rate?
Yeah, their body temperature, their activity levels.
All without having to disturb the animal.
Exactly. So it's much less stressful for them.
And you get a constant stream of data.
Instead of just relying on manual observations.
Which can be.
Time consuming.
Yeah. And prone to human error.
Right. So these systems.
It can really help.
Develop more sensitive and reliable endpoints.
Because you have more data to work with.
Exactly. And it's all objective data.
So it's not influenced by.
Anyone's opinions or biases.
That's amazing. It's like.
The future of humane endpoints.
It is. And it makes me feel hopeful.
Me too, because it shows that we're
constantly striving to improve.
Exactly, to find better ways to
protect the animals in our care.
And to advance scientific knowledge.
Without causing unnecessary suffering.
That's the goal.
It is. And I think one of the most powerful takeaways from this update.
What do you think it is?
Is this emphasis on collaboration.
Oh, absolutely.
And continuous improvement.
It's not about finding a perfect solution.
Because there might not be one.
Right. But it's about working together.
To always be learning and growing.
And to be open to new ideas and approaches.
And to challenge ourselves.
To do better for the animals.
Exactly. And this update, it really gives us the tools.
And the inspiration.
To do just that.
I hope so.
Now, speaking of inspiration.
What are you thinking of?
The update also talks about.
Aging animals.
Yeah. And the challenges of.
Determining humane endpoints for them.
That's a whole other.
Level of complexity.
It is. Because as animals age.
They're more prone to health problems.
Yeah. Just like humans.
Exactly. And those age-related changes.
They can make it harder to.
Assess their well-being.
And to decide when it's time to.
Enter.
Yeah. Because something that might be a big red flag in a young animal.
Might be perfectly normal in an older animal.
Right, like a significant drop in weight.
Or a decrease in activity.
Those could just be signs of aging.
Exactly. So it's important to
know the difference.
Right, and that's where the expertise of the research team comes in.
They need to be aware of those age-related changes.
So they don't misinterpret the signs.
Or jump to conclusions.
Exactly.
And the update actually suggests using
a frailty index.
Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah. It's a way to
assess the overall health of aging animals.
Right. It takes into account a whole range of factors.
Like their mobility, their cognitive function.
Doing well, their eating, their body condition.
It's like a senior health assessment.
But for animals.
Exactly. And it helps to get a more holistic picture.
Their overall health and well-being.
So it's not just about
keeping them alive.
It's about making sure they're
living well.
Health span versus lifespan.
You got it.
Lifespan is just how long they live.
Right, but health span is
the portion of that life where they're actually thriving.
Not just existing.
And that's a really important distinction.
Especially when we're talking about humane endpoints.
It makes me think about my own grandparents.
Wow, that's sweet.
I don't just want them to live a long time.
You want them to enjoy those years.
Exactly. I want them to be happy and healthy.
Quality of life is important.
It is. And it should be the same for animals, too.
Absolutely.
This update, it really is like
a practical guide for researchers.
It is. It's full of advice on how to
design more humane studies.
And to consider all aspects of the study.
From start to finish.
Yeah. From choosing the right animal model.
To planning for the unexpected.
Because research doesn't always go as planned.
It definitely does.
Things happen. Animals get sick. There are accidents.
Sometimes the experiment itself might have unexpected consequences.
Right, and it's crucial to have a plan in place.
For handling those situations.
Always with the animal's welfare in mind.
Absolutely, and that involves
clear communication.
Yes, between everyone involved.
The researchers, the vets, the animal care staff.
It takes a village.
It really does. It's like
humane
endpoints are really about creating a culture of care.
I love that.
In research settings.
Yes, it's not just about following rules.
It's about fostering a genuine concern.
For the well-being of the animals.
And recognizing that they're
sentient beings.
With their own needs and interests.
Exactly. And we have a responsibility to
protect them.
And to treat them with compassion.
This has been such an eye-opener.
Deep dive.
It really has. I feel like I've learned so much.
Me too. And it's a topic that I think deserves
more attention.
Absolutely. Because humane endpoints are
sure.
Both ethical and scientific reasons.
They're a win-win.
They are. And I encourage everyone listening
to learn more about them
and to support research institutions
that prioritize animal welfare.
Because ultimately,
it's about finding that balance
between advancing scientific knowledge
and ensuring that the animals
are treated with the respect and care they deserve. It's a whole other ballgame.
It is. Yeah. Because like you said, as animals get older,
more health problems, just like us.
Exactly. And the update talks about how, you know,
what they might experience.
Yeah. And how that can make it
trickier to figure out the endpoints.
Because something that would be,
yeah,
like
a major red flag
in a young animal
might be totally normal
for an older one.
Exactly.
Like a big weight drop.
Or they're not moving around as much.
Yeah. Those could just be signs of, you know,
getting older.
Aging. Yeah.
Exactly. So the research team,
they really need to be aware of that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So they don't, you know,
misinterpret things.
Yeah. And the update mentions this thing called a
frailty index.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah. It's basically like a
senior health assessment.
But for animals.
Exactly. And it takes into account
all sorts of things.
Like
mobility.
Yeah. How well they're moving around.
Their cognitive function. Are they still sharp?
Oh.
How's their appetite?
Are they eating enough?
Their body condition.
So it's really looking at the whole picture.
It is. It's getting a holistic view of
their health.
Yeah. And it's not just about
keeping them alive.
Right. It's about quality of life.
Making sure they're actually thriving.
Exactly. Health span versus lifespan.
Oh, I like that.
Lifespan is just a number.
Yes. How many years they live.
But health span is how many of those years
are good years.
Exactly. Where they're feeling good. They're enjoying life.
And that's what we want for our animals too.
Absolutely. And that's what humane endpoints are all about.
Making sure that the research
benefits both animals and humans
without causing unnecessary suffering.
Exactly. And this update, it really is like a
guidebook
for researchers.
It is. It's full of practical advice
on how to design better studies
and to really think through
all the different aspects.
Yeah, like from the beginning,
choosing the right animal model,
making sure it's appropriate for the research question.
Exactly. And thinking about the potential impact on the animals.
Yeah, like what are the risks?
What are the potential benefits?
And also planning for the unexpected.
Because research never goes exactly as planned.
Never. There are always surprises.
Animals might get sick.
There might be accidents.
The experiment itself might have unexpected consequences.
And it's crucial to have a plan
for dealing with those situations.
Yeah, and to be flexible.
And to always prioritize the animal's welfare.
That should always be the top priority.
Absolutely. And that involves good communication
between everyone involved.
The researchers, the vets, the animal care staff.
It really does take a village.
It does. And humane endpoints, they're about creating a culture of care.
I love that phrase.
It's not just about following rules.
It's about going beyond the rules.
To really think about the animals as individuals.
To see them as sentient beings.
With their own needs and interests.
And to treat them with
compassion and respect.
This has been such an amazing deep dive.
It really has. I've learned so much.
I feel like we've just scratched the surface, though.
There's always more to learn.
There is. And this is a topic that I think
we need to keep talking about.
Absolutely. Because it's so important for both
the animals and for science.
Humane endpoints are a win-win.
They are. And I encourage everyone listening to learn more.
And to support research institutions that are doing this right.
That are prioritizing animal welfare.
Because it is possible to do both.
To advance scientific knowledge.
And to treat the animals with compassion.
It's not always easy.
But it's worth striving for.
It absolutely is.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been my pleasure.
And a huge thanks to our expert for sharing their incredible knowledge and insights.
You're welcome. I'm glad we could have this conversation.
And to you, the listeners, keep those questions coming.
We'll keep exploring together.
One deep dive at a time. Until next time.